Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me is my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, October 26th, and this is episode 64. Roll the intro.
No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
And we will start it off, as we always do, with the Boston Red Sox and a little bit of exciting news for a team that didn't have much exciting news during the entire 2020 season. They're on record saying that they'd like to keep Jackie Bradley. Not super exciting because they haven't made a deal with him yet, but obviously you like your team being on record saying they're going to keep one of the best defensive players on the team.
Yeah, and I want to preface this with saying probably the stuff for the Red Sox, Celtics, and Bruins is at least a couple weeks old because of like our weird schedule. So this was an article that I found a couple weeks ago. But yeah, like you said, encouraging, one of the best defenders in the game of baseball, I would argue, notably snuffed from, didn't even get a nomination for a Gold Glove, rather. But yeah, I think, we've seen some of the bigger names move on from Boston, and Mookie Betts and David Price and a couple of those guys. So keeping some of these core guys that we think of as core Red Sox players is super encouraging. And a guy in Jackie Bradley that can really turn it on at the plate too and provide some much needed offense in a pinch.
Yeah, and I mean, the offense, the defense, we've basically just gotten used to him making highlight reel catches on a nightly basis and not thinking a thing about it. So definitely a guy you want to see get paid what he's worth and stick around in Boston for a while. And speaking of getting paid, we got Martin Perez on a team option this year. Only $6.25 million on payroll after a relatively good season, I'd say, with what was a very bad Red Sox team. A guy that I'd like to see stay in the rotation if, you know, you have him, if you have Sale coming back, Erod coming back. You might work towards what could be a much better rotation than we saw this year with, I would say, at least one guy pitching a week that I just had no clue who they were. Some guys pitching all season I had no clue who they were, but for only $6.25 million, it seems like a smart deal to keep him on. He pitched well, and it can really round out a Red Sox rotation that has struggled the last couple of years, and I think is a great piece that we can add in there. And one of the highlights for a year that really didn't have a ton.
Yeah, I'd classify his pitching as not terrible. I mean, obviously, just an overall bad year for the Red Sox. Martin Perez going 3-5 with 4.5 ERA. I think a lot of this, you're right, he is a decent pitcher, and has put up good numbers throughout the years, mainly with Texas, which is a team he was on. The first team he was on, then he was on Minnesota for a year before coming to Boston. But yeah, I think under different circumstances, and again, you just have to remember that this season was just odd as a whole, and I think really took a toll on a lot of guys, but we're seeing that in other sports especially, in just kind of some of the lack of preparation time, the lack of practice time, that sort of thing. Although granted, in baseball, you don't typically hold your practices weekly or whatever because, you know, they play such a rigorous schedule. But yeah, I think for this amount of money and for what we need in our rotation, this is a very good option for the team to keep him on and kind of, I would say, fill out one of the lower spots in this rotation. And hopefully we can pick up a couple guys that can move and, you know, pitch behind Chris Sale.
Yeah, for sure. Looking at like a 4 or 5 piece in this rotation. If you think of Sale hopefully coming back, Sale, Erod, Evaldi ahead of him, and then maybe Perez and someone else, we'd kind of have to figure that'll all be in a while for next season.
I also want to note real quick, when I was looking at his baseball reference for the stats on this year, he actually was sixth in what I'm going to assume is rookie of the year voting, because on the it has like awards on the right side. It says ROI. Interestingly enough, it's for his second year, though, so I don't know how that works. He's pulling a Ben Simmons or something there, but just thought that was kind of funny.
Very interesting. You beat me to the Ben Simmons joke as well. But another guy with an option here, and this is JD Martinez. So he actually has a player option, I believe, is the correct terminology. Because
so he can opt out of his contract and become a unrestricted free agent.
Yes, yeah, so he has that power in his hands. You have here written, will he use it after what was an underwhelming year? 213 in 54 games with 7 home runs, 27 RBIs, in 59 strikeouts and 211 at bats. I mean, a guy that was so electric in 2018, still had a lot going for him in 2019, but a guy that you feel like you've rarely heard anything about in 2020. Known for his big bat, didn't bring a lot of homers or anything. I know it was an abbreviated and a weird season, but still, just those numbers not characteristic of what he has done in the past. And I honestly think he's not going to get a lot of money going somewhere else after a year like this. Granted, based on past experience and, you know, how he's played in the past, I think he can still drum up a decent amount of money, but I don't know exactly what he's slated to get paid. I think he's slated to get paid quite a decent amount next year if he stays with the team. A guy I'd love to see stick around, but he might go, he might stay. I want to see him stay. We haven't really heard a ton about it, what he's thinking or any reports on anything, but a guy I'd like to see stick around and then figure out maybe a deal after that for the year after to keep him on even after that. But I guess we'll kind of just have to see when the time comes.
Yeah, I think a lot of these options hinge on the end of the month, kind of when the season is officially over. I believe it's like after October 31st that like free agency opens. It's for sure after the World Series. I just don't know if it ends right at October or if it's a little bit into November. But yeah, I don't think it's a smart move for him to opt out. Now, obviously, I'm not a baseball agent. I'm not his agent. I don't know what he could get somewhere else. Maybe could you look up real quick what he is gonna slated to get paid for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I can look that up.
Well, I talk about him for a second here. But yeah, it just a very underwhelming year for one of, if not the biggest bats in the Red Sox lineup the last couple of years. So, I mean, when you finish as a MVP lead, you know, up there in the league leader with hits, home runs, RBIs. I don't know about hits, actually. That might have been an exaggeration, but definitely always up there in the league leaders in home runs and RBIs. You know, posting 43 in 2018 and 130 RBIs, and then 36 and 105 the following year. Just to have this season, even as weird as it was with COVID and everything, you know, if he's trying to, you know, get as much out of his next contract, which if he signs a decent size one might be his, you know, kind of last contract as he is 32 years old. I think it's safe to say he stays in Boston to try to up his value kind of thing. And then, you know, go from there at the end of next season.
Yeah. So his contract as of next year, he's slated to get paid $19,350,000. So he has an opt out after 2021 as well. So you have an opt out at the end of next year.
And then he's not unrestricted after this coming year.
Yeah.
He
is with us until 2022.
Even more of a reason, I think, to stay. And the fact that he didn't opt out after those two really good years in 18 and 19, I think points even more to the fact that, you know, stay here, like I said, up your value, and then maybe see what he can get next year.
Yeah, so he would enter free agency next year in his age, going into his age 34 season, or he just becomes a unrestricted free agent in his age 35 season. So maybe a guy that he kind of just sees out the rest of his quote-unquote like peak years with the Red Sox to get that money, because I don't know, once you reach that age, you're going to get a contract where you're making almost $20 million a year. I just don't think that that's something that's going to happen. So, like I said before, a guy that I hope we keep around. I'd love to see him continue playing for this team and kind of work towards rebuilding a better team for next year. So I guess we'll just kind of have to see when that time comes, though.
Yeah, and I was going to close here with something about the MLB draft, but I think it happened already, and we definitely don't know enough about baseball prospects. And I think we even switched our picks around because I'm looking at like the picks here and it's not where I thought it would be. So we can move on from baseball into the Boston Celtics, which is nothing because basketball's over. The Lakers win the title. If you actually care about that, go listen to a different podcast about basketball, I guess. We're not going to talk about it. We talked about the end of the Celtics season, and I'm sure we will start to get into kind of trade rumors and free agency rumors as the offseason takes off. I haven't heard anything about a potential start date, though. We can talk about that real quick if you've heard something.
No, I haven't really heard anything about...
That's actually not true, because I just saw an Instagram post. It was like Danny Green or someone talking about it. Like they had thrown out the date December 22nd, but that, in my opinion, is just way too early, and I don't see that happening at all.
That just seems like a weird date to start right at Christmas. I mean, for the players, for the audience, it makes sense, because you're going to have a lot of people around the TV at that time, but... Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like a quick turnaround. You want these guys...
Especially if they're going to go back into like a bubble setting.
Yeah, you're just demanding such a high level of play to turn around with a very short offseason. I'd rather just take the longer offseason. I'm guessing maybe play another abbreviated season next year to kind of get back on the same schedule as before. And then hopefully by that following season, which would be the 2021-2022 season, I believe... Yeah. Would be back on like a normal schedule, all things permitting. But I don't know. I haven't heard a ton of rumors. I think the Celtics need to go out and get a big man, and that's about it.
Yeah, we talked about that. Again, I don't know how legit that is. I just saw it like as we were sitting down to record here.
How reputable Danny Green is.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was Danny Green. It was someone, but he was basically saying like, yeah, I don't think a lot of people would be down for that.
Yeah, not a lot of people are down for his contract. He scammed the city of LA out of $15 million.
But they got a ring, so they don't care.
No, they don't.
Before we spiral out of control here, let's reel it back in, and we will move on to the Boston Bruins after a quick word from our sponsor.
And we will pick it back up with the Boston Bruins and wish we had some better news to start off with, because this part sucks. Torey Krug has signed a 7-year deal worth $45.5 million to the St. Louis Blues. And it's something that I almost felt like we knew was coming. We didn't want it to happen, but it did. And one of the better defenseman on this team, one of the most likable players, one of the players that I absolutely loved watching on this team, no longer gone out, got paid, and you got to respect him for that, and you got to be happy for him for that, because he went out and he got what he's worth. He got a big contract with a good team. I just wish it was with Boston still, but I'm not liking this trend of Boston not paying for the athletes that we really want them to keep around at Mookie Betts, Torey Krug. Hoping that doesn't continue over Tom Brady, but I'll just get your reactions on this. It sucks. I'm sad about it. I wish he was still around. We talked a lot about him, you know, maybe moving up to that first line, but maybe he's just going to go play on a first line somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much summed it up. Like, from a fan perspective, you hate to see a guy like this that was... I kind of use this in the Red Sox terms as well, just like a core Boston Bruin player, like someone you really thought of as a Boston Bruin and kind of had done so much for this team. I mean, he was your lock screen on your phone for how long with that hit back in last year's playoffs?
Probably at least a good 6 months plus with just skating the whole length of the rink to just go check a dude.
Without a helmet, mind you.
Without a helmet, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, from that perspective and just all he did for the team, really sad to see him go, but I mean, a player of his caliber, he definitely deserves to get paid. And you mentioned Boston not paying their athletes, and I agree with you. I hope this doesn't become a trend, because according to, I have a Yahoo Sports article here, so take that as you will. But Torey Krug was quoted saying that this was months ago, mind you, when not months ago, sorry, beginning of the month when he actually went to the Blues. But Torey Krug said something along the lines of not being very close to a deal with the Bruins, and that they had initially made an offer, which you obviously would expect them to. But it says here in the article, ultimately pulled out. I don't know to what extent and what the offer was for, but take that as you will. And yeah, we... You know, you got to know when to let pieces go, but you also have to know when to pay the players and keep them. And we are fortunate enough in the Bruins to have still an extremely good young core of players. I mean, we talk about the top line all the time. Granted, Bergeron and Marchand aren't exactly young anymore, but plenty of other guys who can definitely step up. And speaking of Marchand and the top line, we can maybe get into this second piece if you have anything else to add on the Tori Krug.
No, I mean, just like I said, sad to see him go, but that's just the way things go. If you're not going to pay him, someone else is going to pay him. Go into a team that's going to compete. So, I mean, that's how it goes. But we'll kind of transition over to this next piece I've written down here, which is Pastrnak, Marchand, and McAvoy all undergo surgeries. I believe they were all just to kind of see what was going on. I don't think they actually repaired anything. You can correct me if I'm wrong here because I haven't read a ton about it, but I feel like it was just to kind of see what was happening, not exactly to like fix an existing problem. But once again, if you know more about that, feel free to hop in.
Yes, so you are wrong because they were to repair stuff, unfortunately.
Oh.
That's okay. It happens. It happens. So all these were back in...
You could have jumped in way earlier, but all right.
I was going to let you finish.
Just watch the bus drive off the cliff. That's fine.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, these were all actually back in beginning to middle of September with Pastrnak, a right hip arthroscopy in labor of repair. So, you know, this is interesting because he did have something bugging him. I don't think they ever actually said what the injury was the beginning of these playoffs, like in the first round versus Carolina. You can correct me there if I'm wrong. We never got like he was just like an unnamed injury, right?
Yeah, he was just like just inactives for the night.
Yeah, so you have to think that maybe this has something to do with him not in it, you know, he not looking 100% even after that. So you know, I think this is definitely the right time to have it, obviously, right after the season, and especially who knows what the beginning of next season is going to look like, and we'll talk about that in a second here because the NHL have tentatively targeted a start date. He is expected to recover fully in about 5 months. So 5 months from September, middle of September, is, you know, into February, middle of February. So probably missing the beginning of next season, whenever that may be. So might end up only being a couple weeks, depending on when they actually start. Could be up to a month and a half if they start at this January 1st date that they have targeted. Marchand underwent a sports hernia repair on, again, the middle of September. He's expected a four-month recovery, so, you know, subtract a month from Pasta's injury. He'll be back sometime in mid-January, hopefully. And Charlie McAvoy's was just a very minor thing done early September, and he has actually resumed all off-season activities, and there, you know, no issue with his status to start the next year. That was a lot for me, so I'll let you kind of your takes on this.
I mean, you're definitely right about the, you know, Pastrnak. Maybe that's what was plaguing him in those early playoffs. Maybe that's why he wasn't playing at quite the level. I hope it can be chalked up to that. A guy that we're definitely going to miss regardless of when this season starts. I have to assume it'll start before February, so we'll probably miss him for a bit. But I'm hoping, you know, if the Bruins can kind of get off on their way, figure out their team, and then you just come back and add this massive piece back into the mix, that could be a super, super big punch or a super big boost if the Bruins really need it going into that second month of the season or, you know, getting down that first stretch. But Marchand and McAvoy, you know, you want to get these things dealt with. You don't want to just let them go on and on. Unfortunately, we had an earlier exit in the playoffs than I would have liked, but maybe that just gives them the time they need to get healthy for the next season. This is still a team that, like you said, has a really, really strong, good core. You know, our top line we talk about all the time. We've talked about Chara's getting old, but I mean, we got some really promising young players too. We just re-signed Grizzlick, I believe, for the next 3 years. I think that's correct. I could be wrong. We don't even know anything about hockey. What are we kidding ourselves?
Yeah, we don't even know about sports. What are we doing here?
But definitely encouraging just to see them taking steps to get healthy, not kind of sweeping it under the rug. And it's, I'd just say kind of the maintenance, that you see on players, you know, getting injuries fixed up, getting the surgeries and the different repairs that they need to before the next season. So hopefully it won't have too big of an impact on our start next season. And we'll kind of use that to transition to it. The NHL targeting January 1st as the new start date for the next season. I don't know if they're going to do, once again, like an abbreviated bubble season or what the deal is going to be. I'm guessing they'll talk way more about that as this kind of comes to fruition. There have been rumors of starting...
Little whispers
of starting the season on outdoor rinks in Canada, which I'm both super hyped about and super against, because I think in some aspects it's probably a terrible idea.
I think the players would hate it, honestly, right?
Oh, the players would put
keep ice like in good condition in like in that indoor like stable environment. So like, what would the outside do too? That's just like one perspective, I guess.
You add to the fact that it snows kind of a lot in the winters in Canada, especially where they'd be playing these games. So I don't know how that, like, bringing a bunch of players, equipment, you know, team staff, and then camera crews out onto a frozen lake. I feel like there's room for disaster to strike. I hate to be the person that brings that up, but, you know, a lot of people in one spot on something that breaks.
I mean, I don't know that they'd start on lakes. I think maybe they would, you know, make their own rinks, but I do see where you were headed with this. And yes, it has horrible incident written all over it.
Yeah, I do think the proposed area have been on lakes, but
really? Okay. Well,
one especially famous one in, I think, Calgary that I'm forgetting the name of. So there you go. There's me knowing my geography. But yeah, January 1st and the start date. Exciting just because we have something to look forward to, hopefully. Not NFL, we'll get into that in a bit. The NHL, I feel like, has been really good about, They might take their time making a press release, but they usually are very good at following through on whatever they say. So they're not usually something or a body to say, oh, we're going to do this and then never follow through on it. Like, the idea of them coming out and saying, all right, we're looking at January 1st. That's when we'll aim to start by. I think you can take that in pretty good faith and use that until we otherwise know to think differently.
Yeah, and that is a date to me that it makes sense, right? You give the players a proper off season. You're talking about a league that finished, a couple weeks before the NBA, and then the NBA is supposedly, you know, targeting end of December. That just doesn't make any sense to me. You give the players their much deserved off season, especially after what a crazy year it was, and you know, kind of start fresh in that new year. And the outdoor rink thing is interesting. Logistically, I just don't see how it happens. But you know, maybe they have a grand plan that we don't know about. And just lastly, to touch on the press release thing, you bring up a great point. When they released their plan for coming back in the bubble with COVID, everything, it was super detailed, super well put out, and super well explained, where some of the other leagues just aren't as transparent. And you kind of have to like make your own deductions based on what they're saying.
Well, unless you have anything else to add, we can move into one of those leagues that really...
I do have one more thing. Sorry.
Oh, darn, you ruined my great transition. Go for it.
I know. Here, just hit pause, which just put a tab in that real quick. Yeah, Grizzly 4-year deal worth $14.75 million. There we go. That's it.
That was kind of right. Anyways, talking about leagues that don't know what they're doing with everything going on in the world, the NFL, and more specifically, a team that doesn't know what they're doing, the Patriots. Slowly becoming what was once my pride and joy, the least favorite time of my week, watching the Patriots not do anything on offense for 3 hours every Sunday is super exciting. Just judging by that tone, you know what happened this weekend. Patriots losing a big one to the 49ers. 33-2, wait for it. 6.
But James, at least they got a touchdown, right?
Well, that, yeah. No. No, we did not. Nick Folk. Our scoring was Nick Folk. Yeah, it has been a rough couple of weeks for this team. Just one of the teams that we thought in this league was going to be better disciplined about everything going on in the world, and has just been the exact opposites. And now between what we've seen for opt-outs, coming down with COVID and injuries, we've basically decimated anything good about this team.
I don't even know where to start. Because I'm still pretty heated just thinking the fact that we lost in this horrible, horrible fashion. I don't know that there is one good thing. You know, last week we were talking about, the defense didn't let up. But we've been trying to find the positives in these losses. And I think for the most part, we've done a good job of that. I don't think there's a positive from this. This game was all bad.
Yeah, there really wasn't a lot. I mean, the defense coming up with two interceptions. I think one of those was at the end of a half, just like a heave.
It was on a prayer.
Yep. But it's a game where when you look at the stat sheet, not only for the Patriots, but also for the 49ers, it just seems like one of the worst football games that's ever been played. I mean, you start with Jimmy Garoppolo, 20 for 25, which actually isn't that bad, 277 yards, zero touchdowns, two interceptions. And when it comes down to it, there's, I'd say, two guys who had a good day. Jeffrey Wilson, who is the third string, I believe, running back on the 49ers behind Raheem Mostert and Jerick McKinnon, who both didn't play and still put up 33 on us. As he had 17 carries, 112 yards. Just notice how I'm talking about the good things the other team did, because our team didn't do any of them. And three touchdowns. And Brandon, I'm probably going to butcher this, Ayuk, I think is how you pronounce that, with six receptions, 115 yards. But just, you take away one player, in this game just had nothing going for it. Just, Patriots did not and have not got the offense rolling in weeks. The defense was okay at protecting through the air, but clearly couldn't do anything about stopping the ground attack against third string guys. I mean, this is a beat down team, and they gave us a really rough time. Cam Newton just had his worst game all season. One of the worst games I've seen him play in recent year, with 9 for 15 for 98 yards through the air and three interceptions, getting benched in, I believe, just the third quarter for Jarrett Stidham, who didn't do much better, 6 for 10, 64 yards and an interception, and just nothing going on offense on the ground, through the air. It just, there wasn't a lot, like you said, there wasn't a lot to talk about in this game in terms of positive things that happened.
Yeah, and sorry, my mic was muted, unfortunately. I was pitching in with good stuff there, and I just was not happening. Yeah, I mean, Cam Newton got benched for Stidham, who, you know, we talked about in the, not the Broncos game. What was the game before that?
Chiefs game.
That's the game he played, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about, like, he wasn't great, but just nothing going for Cam Newton. He only threw the ball 15 times because we didn't have the ball that long. What was the time of possession again? I know you haven't mentioned it yet, but we talked about it earlier 30 today.
30-something minutes that I hear. Give me a second.
I think it was 33 to 21, like 33 minutes for the 49ers, 21 for us.
Let's just say, think about how many minutes there are in a football game, and then something like that.
I don't know if that math checks out, but I don't know. I've got too much on my mind right now in terms of the Patriots to think about it. Did you mention his stats? 98 yards, three interceptions, no touchdowns, obviously.
Did mention those as well.
Okay, yep. See, I'm just behind the ball here.
Yeah, so here are your time of possession stats. 38-23 for the 49ers, 21-37 for the Pats. It just shows you, these are both teams that the broadcast talked about. These are both teams that want to play to get a lead and then run the ball and just maintain. And it's kind of hard to do that when you never have a lead. You can't run the ball and there's nothing there to maintain.
I mean, you talk about our top guys here. Rex Burkhead, who was so good a couple weeks ago, four attempts rushing, 12 yards. Our top back for the day was D. Harris. Who's that?
Damian Harris,
10 rushes for 58 yards. Cam Newton couldn't get it going through the air. Also, nothing going for him on the ground. Five rushes for only 19 yards. You know, you look at our top receivers over the last couple of weeks, and Demir Bird. Damir Bird, only one reception. Granted, it was for 16 yards. Edelman, only one reception for 13 yards. Jacoby Myers was actually our leading wide receiver with four whole receptions and 60 whole yards. But yeah, just absolutely nothing going on the offense. Honestly, one of the most painful Patriots games I've probably watched since the Super Bowl versus Philadelphia, I think. So a couple years.
Yeah, it's been a while since there was one that I was just... I watched the first half, and I didn't even want to see how the game ended. I didn't care. I mean, it was sloppy all around play. There was just several fumbles, whether we came back up with them or not, just several fumbles on the offense on a return one time, tons of interceptions, tons of turnovers, and just a team that couldn't seem to get anything going. And I mean, if you look back, the last 3 weeks of play scored a combined 38 points, whereas we scored 21, 30, and 36 in our first three games of the season. I mean, it just, we just can't get anything going on the offense. And this is a team that they need to get out there. This is a Patriots team you're used to. The game plan was always, if you get the, you know, if you get the coin toss, you defer. Other team goes down, you make a stop, you get the ball back, you make it, you put up a touchdown, and you just go from there. You play with the lead the whole game. And this is a team that clearly needs that and hasn't gotten that opportunity. And I'm going to need to see a real, just explosive and consistent offense to really believe in this team again. And it's going to be
for a couple of weeks, not just a game, for a couple of weeks in a row.
And that's going to be really tough considering, you know, our next opponents are Buffalo. I mean, the Jets. If there is a game to get things going, it's against the Jets. Baltimore and Houston. I mean, two really tough opponents coming up here, and we talked about, and we'll talk about this at length in the preview episode, which we'll do later this week. But
yeah, I think it's getting
into crunch time for these Patriots, and they've yet to put up a good performance in the last 3 weeks, relying heavily on, you know, field goals and stuff for a team that should be able to generate a lot of offense, both on the ground. I know we don't have the best receivers in the game, and one of our more promising guys, N'Keal Harry, going out with a head injury, I believe confirmed now to be a concussion. If not confirmed, it sure looked like it. So a guy that we're going to be missing for a couple weeks, but we need to figure something out if this team wants to get rolling and get back to what they're clearly capable of doing. They've done it. I mean, Cam Newton had a almost 400 passing yard game a couple of games ago. And it's really tough to tell, too, because he is coming off of COVID, which I don't think you just recover from it like that. I think there are some, if not really, really high-profile lasting effects. It's just something that you need to get back into that fitness. You need to get back into that rhythm. And clearly, it's just been a tough go of it for the Patriots recently, and they really do need to get something going to turn this game, you know, turn this season around.
Yeah, and I really don't want to put all the pressure on one person in Cam Newton or all the blame on one person in Cam Newton because there's obviously so many areas this team needs to improve in right now. And I don't think we haven't done a Patriots episode like this in a while. Yeah, we've been salty after losses, but we are talking like a season as a whole right now in a way. But I really do think it starts with Cam Newton. He needs to show some confidence back there, and we saw that at the beginning of the year, you know, with the great game against Seattle, with the great what was our opening game where he did well on the ground,
Miami,
any of our opponents, unfortunately. And you know, he showed that confidence the first couple of weeks, and I definitely think you're right, there's some lasting effects from COVID. This is a team that practiced only a handful of times over a 2 week span, but you know, I think Cam Newton just needs to get this confidence back. And whether that's on the ground, through the air, I don't care anymore. He needs to, you know, contribute more than, what is that, 115 yards of offense, 117 yards of offense?
Yeah, it just, a guy who he's capable of doing it. He's shown it before. And I'm going to hold my tongue here a little bit because there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk about that I could talk about when I've thought it through a little bit better and, you know, done a little bit more research. So I'll kind of save it for the preview episode for next week, but or for this later this week against the Buffalo Bills. But it's a team that's shown they're capable and a team that just hasn't delivered. I think you gotta let these losses light a fire under you. And I hate to say it, you know, Tom Brady's a guy where here we go. But you know, he loses and that will fuel him to have the biggest comeback revenge performance the next week. And Cam Newton's a guy who he has these really great quotes. You know, he had a quote that came out today saying, you know, how'd you feel about being benched? And he said, you know, when I went home, the first thing I said to myself is, if you keep playing like this, you're going to make that a permanent thing, which is a really great perspective on it. But he needs to use that as fuel. And as you know, I don't think posting about it on Instagram in a weird text that no one can decipher, that's not enough to show that you're going to do something. Like, just show me in the game. Just go out there, put up a couple of touchdowns, have a good game through the air, on the ground, and we'll talk about it next week. But I don't know. This is something where I think we're starting to see this differentiation between the system last year and the system this year, or the players last year and the players this year. It's a team that, you know, they're lacking some weapons in the air. They're lacking a really, really great running back, but they have some really good guys that they can use that I think are being underutilized, and a team that just really needs to pull it together, in my opinion, to kind of sum all of the complaining up.
Yeah, maybe at the end of the year, we'll do a quick count up of how many times James has mentioned the font that Cam Newton uses on Instagram, because we're up to more than a couple of times now.
It's more like four.
That's more than a couple. All jokes aside, though, you are right. This is something I talked about a couple weeks ago. I just want to bring it up real quick, because we are starting to run a bit long here, and maybe I'll let you close us out after this. But James White, a guy that was, you know, gone for a couple of games, and I can't remember. It must have been over a month ago now that I talked about, you know, the kind of the rise of these dual running back receiver guys. James White, who's been so solid in the past, but, you know, one reception this week. I don't think he was not that big last week. I mean, obviously not. We had no offense. So when you talk about underutilized, yeah, I mean, Edelman only had one reception. You know, N'Keal Harry obviously going out with the injury. Izzo only one reception. A lot of guys on here, actually all but two, only one reception. Again, this has to do with how many offensive plays we ran. But when you talk about underutilized, James White is a guy that pops to the forefront of my mind. You know, he didn't even have a carry in the game.
Yeah, it's just a lot of guys in this team are really talented. And it's the moments when they shine, you really get to see it. Like Rex Burkhead a couple of weeks ago, like you mentioned before. James White has shown that he can make plays in the biggest stage, in the biggest comeback. You know, I believe the most points scored by an individual player in a Super Bowl game of all time in that Super Bowl 51 performance. But we can sit here and talk about what the Patriots have done in the past, not what they're doing right now. But exactly, he's a guy that you want to see more of, you love to see more of. And I'm always torn with our backfield because we have a lot of guys that I think I want to see get a lot of touches on the ball, but it's really tough to balance that out. And, you know, usually it comes to within the first bit of the game, one guy rises to the front where, you know, he's having a day. Let's give him the ball. Let's let him do what he's going to do. But, you know, I want to see more of Burkhead. We haven't seen Sonny Michel in a couple weeks. I think him coming back and just rotating through these guys who can make a really big impact on the ground. And this is a team that they focus on running a lot. And we need to be getting, you know, run on first down. If we're going to run on first down, run on second down, we need to be getting the yardage. And I don't think we've been getting it so far. If we run on first down, get 2 yards, run on second down, get two more yards, we're looking at a third and long situation that we don't like. We don't do well in those situations. We want to be getting, if we're getting third downs, we want to be third and one, third and two. You want those short where you can run, you know, a bootleg play where you roll out and maybe pass it. Maybe Cameron Newton's fast enough, he can just tuck it and run if he sees the opportunity. But when it comes down to it, there's a lot of guys here that can do great things on the offense. They just need the time to shine. And I think that was the most evident thing this week, is when you don't have the time to shine, no one's going to do it. No one's going to step up and make a play because they just didn't have the time to get the offense to a stage that they wanted. But stepping back, like you said, I think one of just the most disappointing Patriots games to watch in a very, very long time. And something that I hope doesn't become a routine moving down the stretch.
Yeah, it could be a long season if this is what we have to look forward to. We'll talk about kind of obviously the Bills game in the preview episode later this week. Hopefully you guys are enjoying those. It's been kind of fun to do, you know, two different podcasts a week when we can. Of course, our scheduling isn't always great. That being said, I think we'll also talk about kind of the league and this division as a whole, because we are going into the biggest divisional matchup the Patriots have played in years. Is that fair to say?
No, only because last year I think the Bills also were pretty good and it kind of came down to our tiebreaker. But in recent memory, besides last year, yeah, it's one of the first times where, especially playing from, you know, being 2-4, moving into week, what are we technically eight. On 8 now?
Yep.
So it's going to be a big game. The Patriots are really playing for something, and I think that's going to be what we need to find out. Like, what's this Patriots team look like when they have something to play for? If that's what they need, then by all means, let them go for it. But if they're just going to crumble under that pressure too, then, you know, I think that says a lot about this Patriots team. But next week's going to be, or this coming week's going to be very, very defining for this team.
Do you know the last time the Patriots started 2-4, just kind of off the top of your head?
I'll look it up really quick if you want to talk for a second.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to say. I didn't mean to kind of put you on the spot there, but, you know, something's got to give, but kind of the opposite. Like, someone's got to make something happen. Whether it's Cam Newton stepping up, whether it's one of our backs stepping up, whether it's, you know, Edelman as that main wide receiver and one of the leaders on this team stepping up, or even a guy in the defense, you know, someone's got to take charge here and, you know, kind of remind this team what they're playing for, what they stand for type of thing. And that this is, like, in reality, it is only a couple of weeks. This is reversible, but something's got to happen soon.
Yeah. So I looked this up. The Patriots went 2-4 last in 2000. 20 and years ago.
Just
in the year 2000. Bill Belichick's first year, the year before Tom Brady infamously came in to replace the injured Drew Bledsoe. The rest is history. It's been 20 years. My lifetime. The first time in my lifetime that I've ever seen the Patriots start 2-4.
Look for, like I said, someone's got to take charge, and whether who that's going to be is yet to be determined, but it's got to happen very soon. And by very soon, I mean like this coming week.
Yeah, we're running out of time for them to figure their game plan out.
Wasn't that just a super cheerful episode of the podcast? Just
really was.
Great. That being said, we really do appreciate you guys listening through all our rambling and whatnot. If you did enjoy, please leave a rating, leave some sort of feedback, leave a comment. Let us know what you want to see. If there's a different segment or different bit we could be doing, let us know. If you don't like something, let us know just in general what you think of the podcast. We really love to hear from you guys. If you want to keep up with us outside of the podcast, you can follow us on our socials. Our Instagram is Brady Bros Boston. The YouTube channel is Brady Bros. My Twitter is Brady Bros Nick. James's Twitter is James_B_Boston. I think that pretty much wraps it up. Just again, thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah, I want to reiterate, just follow us on those different platforms if you want to keep up with us outside of the podcast. And also make sure to leave a rating, leave a comment, just something so we know you're there, and let us know what you're thinking of the show. We will look forward to seeing you in the Patriots preview episode, hopefully on Saturdays, as I think when those usually go up. So we will talk at length about everything to look for in the Buffalo Bills game. I always look forward to that because you guys know I love talking about football. So I'll kind of save the rest of my takes for then. Nicholas, take it away.
See ya.
Alrighty.
We almost one took it. I don't. We'll be right back.